Hello and welcome to Film Stories Live. Film Stories Live? What's it called? Movie Geek Live. Look! Right, so I'd like to introduce the man who had a haircut especially for this, I hope, and yet somehow looks just as bad as before. Simon Ruth!
Did you just say I didn't notice his haircut? Yeah. My dad's in, everybody. Say hello to my dad. If that's about the total amount of attention he's going to get throughout this entire show. Hello, everybody. How are you? Can you hear that all right? Am I echoing? Am I causing problems? Am I irritating?
No.
Yeah, you said yes. Brilliant. Hello. So, my name's Simon Brew. Hello, everybody. Thank you to everyone who follows me on Twitter who's been inquiring about my trousers on the way in. If you don't follow me on Twitter, I think we can safely conclude you're not missing anything off the back of that. So, can I just ask, who has never been to one of these before? Right, hello people who have never been to one of these before. Hello to everyone who's coming back as well, who I've not completely scared away. I will do you a very quick intro of what the whole idea of this is to give you a chance to leave and get a refund before we start. That seems fair. So, I do those magazines, which I will surreptitiously plug in a very subtle way throughout the evening. But also I've worked a lot for film websites and things in London, and one of the things they do in London is they have film conversation shows, and they're brilliant. And you get people coming along, and you get guests coming along, and they talk about films, and just an hour and a half of moody nerdism, with a bit of movies thrown in afterwards. And so, can I repeat the joke I did last time? Can I do that? Are we good? Are we all friends here? Right, so pre-pandemic, you know the one, we got it started, we were getting, 40, 50, 60 people coming a month, and we just thought it's going to take an act of God to derail us. That was the joke, right? And if it works once, damn it, I'm going to try it next time as well. And so what this is basically is trying to build it back. I hugely appreciate you coming back. I know the Midlands Arts Centre appreciate you coming out. And basically it's a very straightforward show. It's me waffling for a bit. We've got some brilliant guests. And hopefully after an hour and a half, I won't bore you to death. It was also surreptitiously noted how many of you brought caffeinated drinks on the way in to offset if it gets boring in the second half. And let me just tell you, I think that is a fine strategy. And I think, yes, just that. I see it. Very well. Can I have a round of applause for the returning, or new to you if you've never seen him before, Hairy Dan. There is Hairy Dan. Hairy Dan has brought another quiz at the end, which is going to rely on me not getting on your nerves for 70 minutes to make sure you're in a good mood for us to get away with what we're going to try at the end. Just a couple of bits and bobs just for this show. I think I've actually put these on a slide, Dan. Do you want to call you Dan or Hairy? Dan will go with him this time. Okay, so just a couple, three warnings I just need to advise you of for this particular show. I've forgotten what these are. What are the warnings, Dan? Help me out. Yes. Ah, right. There will be, this is a 12A-ish rated show, and we're not cussing, we're not like that, but I should warn you, there are two swear words that will appear on the screen at a certain point in very quick succession, and they're naughty swear words as well, so I'd rather you were forewarned. Okay, what else have we got? Yeah, I might have a new book out, and you might occasionally find out what that is. Let me just see if I can subtly get that in. And then, sadly, because of COVID, for the quiz at the end, I can't hand out really expensive prizes, which is, you know, all cheap. Hang on, I wasn't expecting questions that early. You can't derail my plan. All good. We all know what we've got. No one wants to leave and see what they've got on tomorrow already. Brilliant. That's a start. So, without further ado, I want to bring on my first guest for the evening. I'm really chuffed he's come along. He's come all the way from the glamour place of Leicester, I think it is. Can I welcome to the stage, have I got a slide for him? Oh look, a man called Michael Sells, who's going to take us through the story of the Midlands Movie Awards, and he's got lots to tell us about. So, can I have a round of applause for Michael, and hopefully he'll thank you. Yeah,
So you can go there. Oh, is this recording? Great. One job was to read the title of the show off the screen at the start and press record on the recorder. Let's see if that works. I understand. I should point out that this show is being... I'll say hello politely to you in a minute. I'm just going to pick you up a little bit in a minute. Sorry, I'm point forward. This show is being recorded and a version of it will probably go out on a podcast feed or something like that. It is incumbent on you to make the noise of about 200 people. That's all. And so I should just be straight about that. Michael, hello.
Hello, nice to meet you.
I've got your microphone.
I have a microphone.
You do? And I think cunningly, I'm popping a lot now. It has an on button. Look.
It's already on.
That's for you. Say hello to everybody.
Hello.
Hello. So, to save me doing the work, tell me who you are, what you do, and why you do it, and I'll sit back for a little bit.
Okay. My name's Michael Sales, or Mike Sales. I don't know which. Basically, I'm the editor / founder / do the website and everything else for Midlands Movies, and it's a website / organisation I set up. I'm not going to say / as many times as
you're only up to two. I think we're good.
Yeah,
our record's seven.
Prize, which is a website that promotes, features, reviews local filmmakers in the Midlands region. So we go all the way up to North Lincolnshire, all the way down to where does it go up to? Kind of West Midlands, Staffordshire, and everywhere in between. So we have quite a lot of different areas to cover. It's quite big compared to what you might think it is. And I've been doing this for about 8 years or so, and it's been a great ride. And after the last 5 years, we started doing some movie awards to celebrate those filmmakers who have been working so hard to make their local films, often with no or zero budgets. And it's been going from good success so far.
Excellent. So, I'm going to come to the awards in a minute because I'm going to be... Oh, that is really making an irritating noise now, isn't it? None of your time. I'm just going to subtly, so none of you notice, move it down there. Seamless?
Yeah, perfect.
Super, we've got this. So, can we talk about you just for a minute? Because one of the things... That's made it worse, hasn't it? Okay. Unbelievable. I don't know what I'm going to wave furiously at the back in a minute if it goes well. So one of the things we try and do with this show is bring in Midlands filmmakers and promote filmmaking in the Midlands and show that Midlands is you know, filmmaking as a career, as a passion, is feasible in this area. And you've done this far more than I ever possibly could. But if I've got this right, you started off trying to write films of your own. This was born partly out of a frustration of yours. So tell us about this.
Many years ago, a couple of years before Midlands Movies, I went travelling and I did a bit around America, and I played music, I played in bands, and I've always been creative. I wrote a script myself, not a very good one, the first one often isn't the best, and it was set in America, it wasn't about anything local, and I thought, I'm going to make it in Hollywood, everything that goes with it. Sent it off to a few places, and of course, just Reaction Central. But I wanted to show it to some local filmmakers and some other people who are creative in Leicester, where I was based and still am. And essentially what happened was that I couldn't find anywhere. I was Googling, I was Yahooing, I was Binging.
Yahooing?
We're just coming back somewhat. I was asking Jeeves and everything. And so basically I ended up checking most different places. Are there any scriptwriters, filmmakers, short film festivals? I couldn't really find any, certainly not in Leicester, there was some slightly further afield. I knew there was independent cinemas, the Phoenix in Leicester, there's the Broadway in Nottingham, Quad in Derby, there's many more as well. But I started to hear about these places, and then I basically thought, well, if no one else is going to promote it or do it, I'll see what I can find myself. So I was already writing reviews for mainstream movies, and I still do that on the site, I really love doing that. And that became part of the website. I was writing on something else that's probably no longer in existence. I think they were bought out by Rotten Tomatoes.
Are you rich?
Pardon?
Are you rich?
No.
Have you bought out of crime?
No.
That's right.
I was on Ash's website. Okay. Eventually I moved into my own. And that became Midlands Movies. I set it up and then I got in contact with as many local filmmakers I knew, and then word spread. And then I heard more about things setting up in each county, in each city, local film groups, everything from, the large, Film Birmingham type stuff, or Birmingham Film Festival, all the way down to community cinemas that were set up using kind of BFI local funding and things like that, that just might out be in Sleaford or Lincolnshire way, yeah. To set up small things. And anything we can do to help even the smallest production or cinema group to some of the
big stuff. That's great. Just as a quick show of hands, have we got any wannabe filmmakers here? Have we got people who are trying to? I know I've got at least a few. Okay, so there's a few. I'm getting a few nervously acknowledging looks that that's certainly the case. So when you set up Midlands Movies, what was the story that then led from Midlands Movies to the Midlands Movie Awards? And then we'll just show you a little clip, because don't take this the wrong way, right? When I first heard there was a Midlands Movie Awards, and I say this as a very proud Midlander, and I will be coming to stuff later in the show that does not necessarily reflect our city in a particularly strong way, I wasn't really expecting that much from it. What really took me aback was the professionalism of what you were doing, and also the range of the stuff that you were attracting. So I wonder if you can just talk to the infancy of the awards and what that initial response was like while I fiddle with my shirt a bit more.
Well, once you sort that out, I basically was seeing over those first 5 years or so that the films were really great, and then I saw another gap in the market, and I thought, wow, these films are amazing. And I don't know, years ago I thought local filmmakers, bless them, I'm trying really hard with their, yeah, digital, or even I'm from the era of VHS, let's go back some years. But people, you think, oh, it's a local filmmaker, didn't they do well with their no-budget film? But I started to see stuff that was as good as anything I see on TV, some stuff as good as you've seen in the cinema, the technical quality of the equipment became better, cheaper, easier to access. Still, it's still difficult, don't get me wrong, I've never made a film. But one of the things I thought was that, there is nowhere to really reward it either. Celebrate the successes and share in those successes as well. It's not about, it's healthy competition, but it's not, but people have an equal platform to do it on the Midlands Movies Awards, and, you can put it in there whether you're a first-time student filmmaker or someone who's been doing it for years, and everyone gets judged by the jury panel equally. So I did the first one online to see how it would go. So yeah. I just asked filmmakers if they'd like to submit it by email. They did. I've got some jury panel members, a guy called Rob Shepherd, who's from Birmingham, and a few other mates.
I think he's been a few times.
Yeah, that was all I might see him tonight. Yeah. And a few other kind of friends, more than anything. And then I did set up my camera in my flat, on bedroom flat.
Was that the first one?
That was the first one. Yeah, the first one was digital, the rest were virtual. Yeah.
But you've attracted as well a profile of judges that seems to have escalated what you've done, because Shane Meadows was chair of the judges. Are we familiar with Shane Meadows' work? Yeah, yeah. If you're not, just go and watch Dead Man's Shoes, and then we'll report back in the next time we do a show, and we'll just nerd out over that for a little bit.
Yeah, getting Shane, especially this year, which everyone knows was a completely mad, difficult year with a lot of challenges. But getting Shane was testament for the hard work that everyone had done before that as well. So it's never, I've run the Midlands Movies Awards and this website, but there is a team of people that just want to build on it each year. And it's, there's filmmakers who want that kind of recognition. Not just to do it because of that, they do it because they love it. But one of the things is to try and, bring some spotlight, pardon the fun, onto the region, because you get a lot of stuff happening over in Manchester or down in London, obviously. And so people leapfrog this region, I found. And did you make it in London? Or the agents in London, filmmakers live in London. And ditto a little bit in Manchester. Not to knock those places, they've got some great resources. But there's some great things happening here. And obviously, there's certain things that are attracting people here. More so now with, it's not film directed that much for Peaky Blinders and a lot of other things.
It is the irony, isn't it? Peaky Blinders is the one show that's not filmed here.
Oh, it's on the road up in Liverpool a few weeks back. That sort of thing still brings an attention to an area that's sometimes overlooked. And there's some great, great talent. Shane Meadows being just one of those. And so, just over the years, it's got bigger and bigger. And Shane kind of agreed to look at the short films this year.
So, it's not going to be the most breaking exclusive to you all that it's been a pandemic year, but you've got this year's awards going. You've sent me a clip of that, and this is what the awards look like coming out of a pandemic. I just wonder if we could just take a look at that and some of the films.
to Midlands Movies 2020. Well, thank you all very much for joining us here for the 5th annual Midlands Movies Award.
The Golden Globes, isn't it? That's...
And the winner is...
And the winner is...
And the winner is...
And the winner is...
I think you're born to be on the big screen. I thought you scrubbed up particularly well. But can you talk to, because I went and had a mosey around your website and looked at just the range of some of the films that were submitted. Can you talk about the kind of numbers you've got coming through and just the sheer breadth of the material? Because I found that quite staggering.
Yeah, we do it across 16 categories. We were looking at doing the same amount as the... I've changed them a little bit, but they've been consistent over the last few years. But we have about 120 films submitted. And I still think there are more out there to get, and there's a few films I know that don't get submitted as well. And so, but we do everything. We try and do features and shorts. Obviously, it's something that's really popular. Most people are making shorts, not features, but we have features as well. Documentaries, animation, we reward, have categories for actors, supporting actors, actresses, and the cast and the crew as well. You know, editing, sound, music. Script writing, so we try and cover at least a little bit of everything. We don't have, you know, infinite amounts of categories, but we try and do that. And we had the same amount this year as we had had previous years, which was really nice.
Just in terms of number of entries of films, that's interesting. Yeah. That's interesting.
I'm wondering whether this year might unfortunately be the year where the films weren't made, they were finished off in the year that we just had because of lockdown. People were actually had time to edit their films and things because of them being at home. May be part of it, but I don't know until I do it. But I'm already seeing, I've reviewed, you know, 4 or 5 films in the last month of new ones that weren't in the awards at all.
So, are you going to get like 120 films come in if someone just stuck in a flat and died just trying to...
There have been a few based around like your kitchen, but people are still creative. I liked it. You know, people were trying to find ways. If I can't get out of the house, or I can only get down to the end of the garden, what can I do? Can I do a murder mystery or something in my own house? And people were very, very clever. There were Zoom films as well where people had edited together. I don't think I've seen a film, Host, I think it's a horror film. That was really good, and filmed in a similar way. But I've seen a couple of local filmmakers do that as well, just trying to find a way even through that, because no one wanted to stop. You know, people are halfway through projects as well.
Yeah. So, I appreciating it would be very unkind and unprofessional of me to ask you to cite one or two that we should keep a lookout for, but are there one or two we should possibly keep a lookout for?
Yeah, definitely. Let's pick a few from Birmingham, actually. There's Stranded by Tanisha White. I think that Tanisha's one of the last people in that video, actually. And her film's set, and it opens up as a couple of lads on a night out, and it starts in around Digworth, around the Cushion Factory. And that's a really good one. That's like half an hour. Really, really good film. I recommend you checking that one out. There's a really good documentary, the winner of the best documentary, called the Sean Green Story. It's about a Leicester girl who lost her leg in an accident in New York. And it's about her life and how that kind of happened and spiraled out of control. It's very moving. It's a very professional looking film, and the fact that it's kind of hidden space as well, obviously happened abroad, but it's her life afterwards as well. And so check that one out. And one more for good luck. I'd check out any of the animations that you might find on my site as well, because that's a kind of area that's so difficult to do, I think. You know, not say that you did phone out, film, short film in the kitchen, living room, whatever, with a few friends, but you've really got to work hard to do an animation with no money, a lot of time as well. So any of the animations, there's Blather, there's a great Corky film, so go and check them out. So yes, yeah, plenty of exciting stuff happening, and those films are great.
And where can we see them?
You can review them, and often I'll put the link to the film in my site. If you've got a list of winners, I'm trying to catch up with it, actually, because a lot of people have asked the same, especially this year, where can I see the winners, where can I see that? So I've asked the filmmakers to send me any links, and I've got a particular blog about it, and loads of the winners' films from those awards are literally in the blog. You just scroll down, they're just all embedded in their YouTube and Vimeo videos.
And that's MidlandsMovies.com?
MidlandsMovies.com.
So if we go there, we can find...
Yeah.
The films, your opinions of them.
Yeah,
you remember that awkward moment where you've given somebody a bad review and then you give it an award and you have to meet someone afterwards? That?
No, quite the opposite. It's films that I've really liked but the jury panel hasn't, if I'm going to be honest about that. That's really difficult because I'm like, this is a winner, this is a guaranteed winner, but it's a bit of damn you democracy. No, it's really good that people see different things in different films, but yeah, it's harder when I think it's to be the winner and it's got Midlands Movies on. I'm like, I don't get to choose them. It's a group decision, and quite rightly so.
We've just got a minute or two left. So you would. That's awful, isn't it? That's getting on my mind.
Is that not me now?
Is that you? Is it your can of pop? That's right. Pop. That's right. But no, I'm old. What are we going to say? Right. So you were saying, I'm really sorry about this. Hopefully, we'll go in a minute. But you were telling me just outside that the pandemic obviously has changed slightly the timing of when Midlands Movies 2022 is likely to happen and the gap between. So, what's your current plan there, and how can we get involved? Are there things that we can do to support you?
Yeah, thank you, Simon. I was quite surprised that that happened 3 weeks ago, and there's 120 people in the venue, and we had such a great turnout. People were very respectful of everyone's situation regarding, you know, how people felt about the pandemic and things getting back to normal, but people really clearly wanted to get back to normal and also talk about the films and meet fellow filmmakers, and there were people from all over the place, including from Birmingham, there on that night. I was just saying to you that because I want to get it back to where it usually is, it used to happen around February, March, so it lined up with the Oscars, and we used to call it the Midlands versions of the Oscars, but because of the delay in September, so I'm trying to bring it back forward, but then I started working it back out and thought, I've actually got to start it soon. I'm talking like next month. So one of the things I would love to people can do is spread the word out that if you know anyone who's got a film that's made in the region, one of our criteria at the moment is it's got quite popular, but we've had to make it stricter to say that, you know, 2/3, 75% of the film has to be shot within the region. So we've had whole films shot abroad with the Midlands crew, and it didn't really feel like it was a local production, to be honest, even though it's great to see crews get out into different parts of the world and the UK, taking our skill set from the region elsewhere and showing what the Midlands can do. But my awards, unfortunately, you know, for them, it's very much regional based. So get the word out there and say, if you made a film in the last year, you made it in lockdown, anything that's been made in the last, I guess it'll be 18 months almost now, might be eligible, and submit it, and hopefully you'll get that online before Christmas, but that's not too far away now.
And that's MidlandsMovies.com, yeah?
Yeah, we'll basically do it through the Film Freeway platform, which is pretty common for a lot of these awards
and what's
festivals
that?
And stuff. That's filmfreeway.com.
Okay.
And yeah, just let people know that. But we put the link on the website.
You missed a trick with your eligibility requirement. Right. It's just like, surely Spielberg's Ready Player One could have qualified, and you could have nominated him for Best Director and just had someone from Hail Zoe beat him, and that would have been amazing. It's just like, I'd hate you to think I've got a vested interest.
Can I say one thing about that, though? There were some people who showed up 2 years ago, 3 years ago maybe, and they won Best Documentary for a short documentary called 73 Cows, and it was great, and it won, and it's fantastic, so I want to know where this is going. And they said, oh great, thank you for going, it's really cool. And our thing was, you know, 80 to 100 people that year, and they said, we could put this right next to our BAFTA. And then I just googled them while they literally went to the toilet, and I was like, and they were at the BAFTAs last week and they won for Best Short.
Yeah. Was it filmed in the Midlands there?
Yes, there it was.
Oh, well, fair game.
It's
good there to warm up the BAFTAs before they go to the Midlands. The BAFTAs is like the warm up to the Midlands Movie Awards. I think it's terrific the work that you're doing, and hopefully you'll come back with a film or two at some point in the future and keep this show going. It's midlandsmovies.com, and even now, I went on there earlier, there's a whole host of stuff just in and around the region. I think you're doing an enormous service, and thank you so much for coming on.
Mike,
thank you very much. Thank you.
Could you bring a card as well?
I got some flyers, if anyone wants to just grab me.
You want to pop those at the back, that's great.
Thank you very much. So now we've had a grown-up, it's sort of up to me just to lower the tone and just bring it back down a little bit. And this is the bit of the show where I just talk through some of the movie news that's been happening over the... But when were we here last? Was it July, I think, was the last one? So we've got quite a bit to catch up on. And boy, have we got something really exciting to catch up on that's been happening in the West Midlands. This man, did you follow this story? Is this like, I mean, we've got Hayley Atwell and we've got Tom Cruise, and how many of you knew that they were filming Mission Impossible 7 in Birmingham just in time for me to talk about it at this show? Even my dad knew that they were filming Mission Impossible 7, and he still thinks they're on the second one. So, you know, so I thought, when I first started doing shows here, the very first show that I did, I opened with like a 5-10 minute spiel of the films that were made in Birmingham when I was growing up. And I mean, films like Clockwise with John Cleese and stuff like that. I Bought a Vampire Motorcycle with Michael Elphick going along King's Heath High Street. And that was about as glamorous as we've got. Since, and it's coincidental, since this show started, it's exploded. It's amazing what happens. And so if you haven't followed this story, I think most of you have, we've had a major Hollywood production filming in Birmingham. And for all that I'm about to pull its leg, I think that's a really big deal. I think that's something really, really special. I think there's a lot of film development work going on in Birmingham. Stephen Knight is still trying to bring his Mercian Studios to the West Midlands. And the Birmingham that I grew up with as a place where you could barely make a film, now I could go to New Street Station and I could see a Hollywood film being made. And I think that's going to change someone's life. I know that sounds really twee, but I am genuinely passionate about that. That's not going to stop me taking the rise out of it, though. But I did want to get the serious bit in there. Because, did you follow Tom Cruise's tour around the Midlands? Did we see any of this? Because he ended up in Coventry at one point, because Coventry Airport was shut, and so he rented someone's back garden so he could land his helicopter. And this is true. I was just like, well, hang on, I've been to Coventry. It's just like, they're lovely place. I know we have people from Coventry. I've got no problem with it at all. There's some lovely breeze blocks in Coventry. But it's just like, it just made it sound like just like one of those really, oh, they just borrowed their back garden to land a helicopter. And then you look at the picture and it's just like, this isn't like a two up, two down. It's just like they happen to own a massive field. And there's Tom Cruise landing his helicopter. Oh, power to them. But he ended up in the town centre. Did we see this? That Tom Cruise went and had a curry in the middle of... Did you all catch this? And it's small things like this again. I mean, the serious side of it is it does make the difference. So we've got Ashes in the middle of town, and he agreed to have his photo taken, and he went back in, he had a second one, and what's... wasn't so widely publicised is he got the entire production team to go the following night, and they also went there. So, I mean, I would have been starstruck by Christopher McQuarrie being in town, the movie nerd in you. He's a movie director and writer. I think he's done some astonishing stuff. Won an Oscar for The Usual Suspects, I think, was Christopher. But he's been in there filming. But the thing is, I read about this on Twitter, when I wasn't talking about my trousers. And of course, Twitter does tend to have a bit of Brummy wit in some of the replies. The first reply I saw under this with Cruz saying he went in and had two curries. Here's a movie gag for you. Risky business, having a curry, then another one straight after, no matter how good it is. For the purpose of my dad, Risky Business is a Tom Cruise film that he made in the early 80s. Sort of dampens the joke if I do it that way, but nonetheless, I just like... but then, my beloved hometown, I mean, when Hollywood comes calling, it doesn't always reflect itself brilliantly. And yeah, so notably when Ready Player One came to town, the story there was Spielberg, and I'm not making this up at all, was looking for a really depressing future dystopia, and he ended up in Digbeth. And that's the grim future that he depicts in Ready Player One, and it's true, and I am a Birmingham City fan, you may boo. Oh, I got away with that. But it's just like the walk I go to Birmingham City's ground is where Ready Player One was made. I thought that was really quite something. When Tom Cruise came to Birmingham, we nicked his car. I mean, talk about attracting inward investment to the town. He parked his BMW up in Birmingham. It ended up in Smethwick with half the insides missing from him. But nonetheless... the positives were there to be seen, and the big one for me was when Tom Cruise ended up at New Street Station, or Grand Central we're supposed to call it now. Is that right? It's still New Street Station, isn't it? Okay, if we can go with that. And if you didn't follow what was going on there, it was New Street Station was at Grand Central, stroke whatever, was dressed up as Abu Dhabi Airport for the purposes of this film. And so I did the only logical thing, if I want to find out, this is a bit snarky, I apologise for this, this goes against a little bit of my code, but boy did this get on my nerves. I did the only logical thing I want to do if I want to get the latest cutting edge news from Birmingham, and so I read about it on the Birmingham Live website. So, just about... You've been on it. I mean, and the thing is, I went back like a couple of minutes later and tried again after I'd refreshed everything, and somehow I managed, to make it worse. It's just so. But the guts of this story was that they redressed. I think in the end I ended up at the excellent I Am Birmingham website. I think that slightly less intrusive than the others. And this is what happened. You know, so the first reports of this was Cruise was in town at the end of July for location scouting. And again, I love my city, I keep putting this in, but if you're going around the ball ring, the last thing you expect to see is Tom Cruise checking out HMV and, you know, just getting a cup of coffee. But they'd come a couple of weeks before, they scouted it and they reported it. And so these were shots that were taken from the filming in the station. But I thought, if what I'm trying to do for you, it's a purely benevolent gesture, is to make this show the cutting edge place to go for the latest in West Midlands movie news, this is my boot leather on the ground moment. I have to get my backside to New Street Station, Grand Central, to get you the exclusive pictures of this that no one else was getting. And that is exactly what I did. With this show in mind, I hopped straight on a train, I got to New Street, and I'm proud to present two exclusive images from the upcoming Mission Impossible 7. Now, the problem was... The problem was I got there the day after. My timing was slightly off. But just for the purposes of explaining this, I can exclusively reveal that in the film, it's not the wasabi counter at the bottom, that's not going to be in the film, but there will be a Dior stand in the movie. And so I can exclusively reveal that there'll be some duty-free scents at some point in Mission Impossible 7. I did try and get a closer look as they were taking it all down. Have I got another picture? There we go. Look, that's the slightly closer one. And I did try. I think you can just about see the man behind, just behind, who's taking it all down. I went and talked to him to try and find out what was going on, and he told me to go away. But nonetheless, I want you to know that I tried to get you. And I have, for the purposes of when you tell other people about this show, all they need to know is you got to see two exclusive behind-the-scenes shots that nobody else saw. So if we're all good with that, right, okay. The other thing, if you were here last time, again, it doesn't matter if you weren't here last time, I talk quite a lot about the work of Nicolas Cage. And so I've decided to make that a regular part of this show that we're going to have, just our Nicolas Cage on day. This will be very brief, but nonetheless, I think it's important we check in with the most prolific actor in film. If you are unfamiliar with Nicolas Cage, again, I'm really sorry, there is no possible way I can explain him to you and still us all be finished for 9 o'clock. So I'm just gonna quickly get through two quick news stories about him. That picture's not a bad summation of him. If you just tally that with the fact that he's also deservedly won a Best Actor Oscar, and he's been in a film where he dressed as a giant bear and shouted the bees a lot, you've got a rough flavour of Nicolas Cage. So he's got another film to tell you about. In this one, he's taken a real left turn. I'm plugging my own website. I put the story on the Film Stories website, everybody. I knew you'd be pleased. And look, you can press it, don't be shy. Oh, God. Look, so look how many adverts aren't over the pictures on that. I mean, I'd actually. So he's going to risk his sanity, I can exclusively tell you, in his new film. He's doing a couple of westerns. This one is called Butcher's Crossing. And hang on, I've got the synopsis for you. He's going to be playing a buffalo hunter working in the 1870s who will find himself teamed up with a younger colleague who dropped out of Harvard. They will head on a journey that will risk not only their lives but also their sanity. Rest assured, if you don't like this Nicolas Cage film, there will be another one roughly 6 weeks after it that we're going to talk about instead. Because even as we stand here, it's two Nicolas Cage films since we've last met. So Pig came out, and just this very week, just this very last week, and now playing in cinemas is Prisoners of the Ghostland. Now, Prisoners of the Ghostland is what I briefly teased last time for a sequence in it that lasts for about 3 seconds that involves Nicolas Cage shouting testicles at the top of his voice, and I just thought it would be decidedly immature just to bring you that clip. Dan? So anyway, I'm good with that picture being on the screen, Dan, that's fine. It is a big, we are on the eve of a big release. You know, I know, we're getting a really huge, huge release tomorrow that we've waited for ages. Yes, it is my book, but I'll come to that. Let's deal with that now. I've got a Choose Your Own Adventure, but I'm not allowed to call it that for legal reasons. Midsummer Murders interactive novel. I've been getting involved in the social media promotion of that. That the publishers asked people to tweet whatever they sent out, and I think all I managed to do was tweet "I want cheese" or something like that, didn't I? Did I do that? Did I do a screenshot? There you go. That's my cheese. So that's my Midsummer Murders. My Midsummer Murders plug. But also tomorrow, cheese makes sense if you watch Midsummer Murders. If you don't, they kill people with cheese, and it is really—it's seven shades of hilarious. It's just comedy gold. But the big release of the second biggest release. Of the week, damn it, I'm going to brass this out, is of course this. Tomorrow, we're getting the James Bond film, No Time to Die, after you can see the original release date. That's April 2020. The film, this is genuinely a politics neutral show. All I would say is the producers of No Time to Die reacted to a pandemic better than any government on the planet, from what I could see. They delayed it in double quick time, and every time there was a press conference about they're going to lift lockdown, all I did was check the release date of No Time to Die to see where we stood. So that's what this show's on. It's just like they're sticking to their release date. We're fairly, you know, we're fine. So the reviews have come in overnight. It's supposed to be excellent. I'm hugely excited to see it. Inevitably, conversation has fairly quickly turned to who is going to replace Daniel Craig as James Bond. And I genuinely found this quite fascinating. That I think it's pretty well known. This is his last Bond film. He said this very widely. I don't think I'm giving you a massive spoiler in there. He dies in a freak fishing accident at the end of the film. That might be me misleading you, let's see. But what this means is the odds are coming out for who's going to replace Daniel Craig as James Bond. It's weird, actually, because we've got two of these going at the same time. We've got any Doctor Who fans in? Yeah, see, I'm a doctor. Where are we on Russell T Davies coming back? Let's have a yay or nay. Yes. Yes. We've got about four yays and stony silence. So I think Russell's still got a bit worse. But the odds are coming out now on who's going to be the new Doctor Who, who's going to be the James Bond. There are some crossovers, but I'm not going into that. But the current odds, I went to Paddy Power, but I'd like to say other bookmakers who will happily bleed you dry are available. So I got no preference there whatsoever. It's just theirs was easier to screenshot. So the current odds to replace Daniel Craig as James Bond are, let's have a look, we've got Tom Hardy is the running favourite. Shaky of the head there. We're not keen on the Hardy. Has he got on your nerves? We've got René Jumpage. Now, he was Bridgerton, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Which was that Netflix show that was basically lots of sex, but we have to dress it up as it's a really posh period drama. Yeah, that the one? You all knew that one, didn't you? Luke Evans, fairly traditional names that come up pretty much every time whenever James Bond is going to change. However, I always like to scroll down because I just find this whole business model completely nuts. Because if you scroll down and there are an assortment of names and you just look at them and you just think, surely nobody is putting money on, for instance, who have we got? Alan Carr. To be the next James Bond, but legitimately, he's 500 to 1 to be the next James Bond. Alan Carr. I mean, I like Alan Carr. I've talked about the show he does on Sky, There's Something About Movies, which I think is really underrated. But I don't think even Alan Carr would put a pound on Alan Carr to be the next James Bond. But, I mean, have I done a screenshot of all the other 500? Will Smith is the same odds as Alan Carr. I mean, it's just great. P. Diddy is 500 to 1 to be the next James. I mean, look at that. Because there's a couple. I mean, if this was 10 years ago, Sam Worthington would have been a favourite, I would have thought. How his career changed fairly quickly after a couple of films. But it's just like this, it's a bizarre mix, some of whom look slightly more plausible than the others there. And I think I've cut off people like Bono is on there, and Prince Harry is a Bono as James Bond. And so I thought, well, this is odd. And so surely, you know, someone's got to have come up with this. So I wrote to Paddy Power, and I tried to find out what was going on. And they initially said that the suggestions that come up are both ones they've thought of in the office. Couldn't have seen that, right? And ones that people have legitimately backed. And the way that the algorithm works, and I'm not advocating gambling or anything like that, it's just when people start putting money on people, the odds shorten. So I was particularly entertained that Col Meaney, do we know him from Star Trek and The Commitments and Con Air? He's got the ass kicker car in Con Air and it's great, right? He's 300 to 1 to be James Bond, which by definition means more people have been betting on him to be James Bond than, I don't know, Russell Crowe or Rupert Everett or someone like Daniel Radcliffe. But I wrote to Paddy Power to find out about this. I was just like, can you tell me, has anyone put money on P. Diddy, Bono and Prince Harry, or is this just like a game? You know, it's just like, and so I copied and pasted their email. This is a legitimate email. They replied, Prince Harry has been a popular selection in the market. Well, and here's another exclusive for you, Bono and P. Diddy aren't a popular choice with punters at the moment. What's going to change once we've all seen No Time to Die? Is there a big twist ending that just involves you two uploading an album you don't want to your computer? I just had my mind blown a little bit by this. But also, and this is a legitimate exclusive for you, I did the No Time to Die press junket last week. And I got to interview the producers of the James Bond films, Barbara Broccoli and Michael G. Wilson. And I thought, I knew I was going to see you, I would help you make an informed choice on who you bet on to be the next James Bond by asking them if, well, let's just play the clip.
Hello, I'm Dusty. I've just checked the latest odds.
and Bono and Prince Harry are both 500-1 to be the next James Bond. In your expert opinion, are they worth a flutter?
I wouldn't put any money on anyone at this point.
Little touch of the nose. Little touch of the nose. At this point, he says. And what I also have a habit of doing when I do these videos is to leave things on very unflattering freeze frames, as you can see there, which I thought was my surreptitious attempt to audition for a Bond villain, actually. That's my Bond villain cackle. But then I went through the pantheon of Bond villains and the only people who are follically challenged and have glasses. This was the only one, really, I could find. There you go. And you know, tomorrow never dies. It's not going to happen. Nonetheless, if you do want to put some money on me to be the next Bond villain, Paddy Power will gladly take a few quid off you. I'd imagine at 500-1. I mean, that seems to be the going rate. I'm delighted now to introduce my second guest. I'm not going to bore you on news anymore. I've got other things to bore you about in a minute. Can you please get that pin? Oh, leave it on if you must. we've got an old mate of mine, and also has become, I think I can say, Rob, to your surprise as much as, an author. You know, that this is something he never really saw coming, and I mean he's always been a really good writer, but he's taking his movie nerdism now to a brand new, and as we're about to find out, incredibly expensive book. So I've asked him a lot to talk about it. Please can you welcome down Rob McLaughlin.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Are you hearing me okay?
Yeah.
Are you the warm-up act all of a sudden or something? What's good? So, I've known Rob a long time, and we worked in magazines together. I think I can, briefly.
Yeah, we were so long, we had hair. That's how long
ago. Yeah, don't start, he's already gone on about that. But you then went off, and you've been, you're not there now, I think you've only just there, but you went off to University of Central England, where you've been encouraging filmmakers there pretty much ever since. So first and foremost, I mean, let's start with the book.
Yeah.
Because have we got anything on that yet?
Not yet.
We haven't put the picture of you up, Rob. I really should have. Should we put the picture of Rob up?
There you go.
There's Rob. He's the one in the middle, just in case you need some guidance. So, I mean, tell me how you've come to write a book and what the book is about.
Okay. I used to work at BCU, which is University of Central England.
Is that not called that anymore?
That anymore. It's been
is that recent?
It's a long time since it's been called that. So it's now called BTU, which is in the centre of Birmingham, next door to Millennium Point. So then we go to a think tank with the people who are opposite there. And I was there for about 15 years. And I was a lecturer in media, and I was a lecturer in film, and I became a big geek by living film. And as we do, we talk about movies, and we make movies, and do all these kind of bits and pieces. And I was part of a convention called Cine Excess. Have you ever heard of Cine Excess before?
What's Cine Excess?
I've not heard of that. It's a festival conducted at Birmingham. It was done by a colleague of mine called Xavier Mendick, and it was a festival to do with films, or excess films, films that are on the edge of kind of weirdness and kind of the cutting edge of filmmaking. So it's an academic festival, but they have weird, wonderful bits and pieces. We had Pam Grier last year as a guest. Which is
Pam Grier?
Pam Grier, yeah.
What, Jackie Brown?
Jackie Brown. Yeah, so she was there. We did it via YouTube and via Twitter and via Zoom, but she was a guest there, so. So she did a thing, it was amazing, to talk to Pam Grier about black exploitation films and 70s movies. This year, we've got a gentleman called Brandon Cronenberg, who you might have
heard
his dad. So his dad has done a fair bit. So it's quite a high profile festival.
Yeah, his dad's David Cronenberg, if we're missing this. I mean, that's quite a coup. That's
quite a good one. And there's we met Victoria Price, who was Vincent Price's daughter. So.
Yeah.
So crazy things happen when you go yes. I have a tendency to say yes to things like this. I will do that, and I end up doing things that end up taking me at weird tangents and doing bits and pieces of the career. So anyway, at the festival talking to people, and there's a gentleman there called John Atkinson. Hi, John, if you listen to this, and please let me do the second book, thank you. John Atkinson writes for a very small publishing house called Auteur. And also come out of Liverpool University Press, and I said, oh, cool, I've got some of your books at home, because I have, and they're really nice, they're really good introduction books to horror, because that's kind of the geeky area that I'm into. Has anybody ever written a book on Poltergeist? You know, no, people have written chapters on books, and people have written articles and academic papers on the topic. So, do you want one? Put me together a proposal and see whether it works out okay. And so I went home and did some bits and pieces and ended up writing a proposal. I mean, yeah, that's fine. Let's go for it. It's all we can do. So I spent a lot of evenings and weekends creating an entire book based around Steven Spielberg and Toby Hooper's Poltergeist. So, which comes out next year. That's a watch party I did with the guys and the girls who did a documentary called In Search of Darkness. Has anybody seen that documentary? It's on Shudder. Has anybody watched Shudder?
Shudder is where we find Host, which is a. Can I just check how many people have watched Poltergeist? Just in case we need to. So, Poltergeist was notable, wasn't it? Just for. I mean, it was the film that changed the rating system, wasn't it?
It's a film, Spielberg.
Was it a PG?
It's a PG. It's not now, it's a 15 now, but it's a PG.
Not surprised. It's a therapy case now.
It's one of the films where. I'm sure you've all had this film. Mum, Dad, can I watch this film? And you go, no, you can't watch that because it's 18 or 15, whatever. Please, can I watch it? And that was the film. That was the film that I should have watched as a kid and did. And of course, like Nightmares. I'm sure it was Jaws, and for me, it was Poltergeist. It was a film that they went, yes, let's do it. Yeah, thanks for that. But that's the film that went, yeah, I love horror films, and also the fact that I'm really scared of horror films still. And this is the film that kind of stuck with you for a long, long time. It's one of these films that you see and you love and you watch. I love that movie. I'll probably watch it every couple of years. And then I've had to watch it a lot over the past couple of years to obviously do the book. But it came out at the same time like E.T. did. So if anybody who's ever seen E.T., which I'm sure you have, okay. Yay! Fantastic, we've got E.T. fans here. So E.T. came out at the same time as Poltergeist, and of course completely overshadowed Poltergeist itself coming out at the same time. But they're both made by Spielberg, and they're both Spielberg movies, and they're both looked by Spielberg, and about kids on BMXs going through California. But one has a benevolent alien, and one has a guy ripping his own face up in a bathroom, so you can see that.
But it's a PG,
and Spielberg, due to his influence, knew full well that Poltergeist was on the extreme, and Toby Hooper, who was the guy that did Texas Chainsaw Massacre, definitely was on the extreme. But if you go back and watch those early 80s movies, you go back and watch The Last Crusade, you go back and watch Indiana Jones, they're all pretty horrific.
I think Indiana Jones, The Temple of Doom is the Spielberg horror movie. Yeah. I just think that stands next to Poltergeist.
It's a creepy movie. And these are films that were like, oh, you're perfectly fine. And kids nowadays, they're born as far as the creepiness is concerned.
How old's your child, Rob?
She's nine.
Yeah, she watched Poltergeist? What's the film she's done that to you with?
Nothing yet, but she will do at some point. She'll go, I'll never see that, whatever it's going to be. So she's as of yet, hasn't really kind of got into horror movies. So we did watch Spirit, which you had up before.
Yeah.
And that was quite nightmarish. We did watch My Little Pony.
Spirit? Yeah. And that's like the U certificate animated film about horse.
To watch that. No,
you're writing a book about Spirit. I mean, it's a night of exclusives if you're going to hit us back. Challenge accepted. So your book is out next year. Look, I mean, there's two things I noted from this listing, right? Because number one, it's out next year. It doesn't have a cover. Number two, I'm a friend of yours, Rob. Don't take this the wrong way. I love you very dearly, as you know. £75. What are you printing it on?
I'll come to your house and I'll make you tea for
that. you're going to come round to my house and hand write it on
Righteous Soul. We have monks doing it. We actually have them all to join together. Write it out on stretch of. It's an academic book. So the idea is you can buy a paperback, which is a square paperback. But they do academic journals, academic books. The idea that it might last a bit rather than a year of a slightly film. So the reason why it's in it quite quick is because you should go back to universities and colleges. So we can get on people's reading lists, which is quite easy because I do still still teach at college now, and also the fact that my colleagues still work there, so I can push it. Buy this. So it's not you.
Do you want to be admitting that bit on tape? Is this basically like an Oceans movie or something? Yeah. You've just like
advice at least. Yeah. But it's a case that a university will think of nothing than spending £75, £85 in a book because that's an academic book that goes onto the shelf and gathers dust and students don't read, unfortunately, which I wish they did.
Please
read more books. Honestly, students don't read as much as I wish they did. And that's the thing I really wish students would read more and talk more about movies and to know more. And I've been talking to people in the audience the best possible, how geeky they are, it's amazing. Because I always kind of think, well, if I read one book, I have to read five and things. So this is the kind of thing you realise when you buy something, that people know a lot more than you do about things, and have done more research, or know more about this, know more about that, or you phone somebody up, you ask whether that thing about the curse was real, and whether those skeletons at the end of the film were real skeletons, and they go, yes, they were. So all these kind of bits and pieces, you guys as experts out there in books, because people read it, people watch movies, and people absolutely love what it is that they do. So if you can buy it for 75 quid, that's fantastic, but there's obviously a lot cheaper version to buy at the same time. So I'll go with the other one.
I've known Rob for a very long time, and to say that movie knowledge bursts out of his ears would be no understatement. And I do think it's long overdue. You've written a book. So as much as I'm pulling your leg about the price, but you know, I'm a Brummie and I'm on a budget, you know, so I will now enroll as a student at your college, just so I can. I think it's tremendous that you've done it. And one of the things I love about the guests that come on this show is just like, we've had people who made, I mean, we had Simon Cox on last time who made a sci-fi film. We've had all sorts of guests. And
Claire and Auntie went.
Yeah. No, they're coming. Don't spoil that. And it's always started with some degree of conversation. Yeah. It's like, can I do that?
Yeah.
And then it happens. And you're going to be, this time next year, you're going to be a published author as a result of that.
It is crazy to think about it. It's a case of just saying yes to things. So you don't know where things lead to. And this is the thing, talking to a gentleman with a son of books going, can I do that? There's no restrictions on things. There's no one to say in the audience that no one should be able to write books and definitely not to make films. We'll have a little camera in our pocket we can take out and use for the video making. We're sure we're making movies and making books because there's no barriers to say you shouldn't be doing that. No one says don't do these things and no one says don't make books. You put a pitch together, you find out who the author is, you find out who the writer is, you find out who somebody wants a magazine for yourself, go, I like Disney movies or Spirit movies or My Little Pony movies, and there's going to be an article, a review or a criticism somewhere. Because there's no restrictions. People should always go, well, that's going to be my stuff. Hopefully people read my stuff, but people might read your stuff as well, which is a brilliant thing, because the more people write, the more people review, the more people critique films, the better it becomes. And we all get the chance to have our voice and our opinion, which is fantastic.
Just out of interest, how many times has he mentioned My Little Pony?
Is that twice? It's a good thing.
It's building something there, isn't it? It's just building something. If you don't mind, can we pop up that slide? I think I might have put it twice, so it might be the next slide. I mean, Rob, we've got that. Right, so
there's a thing in the audience who I'm going to remember very well.
So we've got about 6 or 7 minutes, and that picture alone, I feel, warrants a fair amount of discussion. So, for those who aren't of a certain age, those are characters from the classic children's very warped TV series. If you look back and think about it, Rainbow. And so we've got George on the left, Rob in the middle, and Zippy on the right. So, I mean, the logical question here is, why have you got George on your right shoulder and Zippy on your left?
I'm saying yes again. I do
work. What the hell did they ask?
I'm only joking, you need the money. I didn't know what's going to happen. It's a specific fetish if you like that. But essentially, what happens is that at university, you end up doing academic papers and doing academic journals, and we have supposed to engage in industry. And a very good friend of mine, Chris Perry, runs a company called Kaleidoscope. So, have you ever heard of Kaleidoscope, the CV archiving company, before?
Tell us a little bit.
Based in Birmingham, all these things we didn't know. And it's great, the fact that we had the Birmingham Awards, because I didn't know any of the filmmakers, which is brilliant, because it means there's all these filmmakers out there that other people don't know, so we can all find out these brilliant filmmakers. But Chris Perry runs a company called Kaleidoscope. Kaleidoscope are a TV archive company, production company, but they look through all TV. Their job is to find things that have disappeared. Any Doctor Who fans that know full well there's some Doctor Who episodes that are missing. And some people know where they are, some people don't, that's a story for another time. But essentially, they were missing Doctor Who episodes, they're missing episodes, all these kind of TV shows. But it's Chris's job and Chris's team's job to try and find these hidden bits and pieces. And every so often at university, he would do a show, very similar to what we're doing, and they'd show all TV, things that they'd found, things that were new, or things that had a specific theme. So one of the themes was music and sound, and we did a lot of things to do with the Beatles, and it had some Beatles footage. And one about, I'll say 18 months ago, which isn't the case, it's about 2.5 years ago now, because of course the pandemic, was to do with Muppets and puppetry, because they found an old episode of Fraggle Rock that hadn't been seen. So we've got the premiere in Birmingham of this old episode of Fraggle Rock, but because Fraggle Rock's puppets and Henson, a lot of the people who were puppeteers in the UK came to see them. So I met one in the room, who played both those characters, and I met a gentleman called Warwick Vanhoef-Pike, who played the Chancellor in Netflix's Dark Crystal. So you end up meeting people. And I also met Hacker, the dog, if anybody watches CBeebies. So it was quite a weird and wonderful day. You go, that's Hacker, if I'm telling you. And there's Burnwood to him, and I've been Orville. Keith Harris wasn't there, unfortunately, but I got to see Orville.
It would have been quite odd if he was.
What it is behind us, the technique I mentioned before, the Chancellor, was the guy who was operating both City and Burnwood at the same time.
You know, it didn't occur to me there was a human behind you. I did actually think you'd stuck them to your shoulders or something. They're hiding very well, Rob, if you don't mind me saying.
It's their job to hide, that's what they do for a living. I think maybe it's just the width as well. They've got a lot of interwars watching this as well. So. But yeah, so that's why I ended up meeting Zip and Bundle in a corridor in Birmingham City University on a Saturday afternoon with people who like Muppets and Puppets, which is fantastic.
And so you're not at BCU now. Where have you ended up?
I ended up at South Staffs College, which is over towards myself. I live in Pleasant Litchfield, and so towards the Children's Tamworth and Cannock. So I'm over there now rather than being in the centre of Birmingham. But I still get an opportunity to come into Birmingham up tonight. I haven't been at Birmingham for a long time, but it's nice to come in and to do things and to forget that things get filmed and get shot in Birmingham. And you mentioned films like Ready Player One and The Girl with All the Gifts.
Yeah, of course.
Found here as well, the film in Dudley.
That's a great film, The Girl with All the Gifts. Anyone seen that? That's terrific.
The film in Birmingham, the film in
Leeds
Dudley.
Leeds that up too, didn't it? Yeah. Right.
Post-apocalyptic futures, again, zombie-infested places like Dudley.
Unbelievable.
But it's a great movie. If you guys haven't seen that, it's fantastic. But Birmingham becoming a film city, and it has been for a long time. It's a film city we try and encourage students to go to, both the students I'm teaching now and the students I have taught before. Basically say, Birmingham's nice, you don't go to London, or go to London, obviously. but stay here because there's so many films being made, there's so many production companies here, there's people doing fantastic bits and pieces, there's animation studios here, there's film studios here, there's visual effects studios here. We just need the groundswell to get people to stay and to want to produce movies and to have this fantastic enthusiasm to want to go out and make films. And as I said before, we've all got a camera in our pockets. We should be making films all the time. We should be there encouraging other people to make films and to review films and to be a film city. And that's hopefully what we can do, continue doing. So thank you again for letting me talk about my book and about the Muppets. And also the fact that we should be making movies, which is fantastic.
And he's been very modest about the work that he's done, but I know throughout his time at BCU, which I'm now calling by the correct name, which might underline my point, but I know that you've gone out of your way to encourage students to make films, that you've really pushed people to do that.
Because we want people to go and make films. My colleague Ty, who was a student about 4 years ago, went to go and work on the Bond movie. He finished Benham recently. So he's actually going out. And a kid from Small Heath in Birmingham, who was really passionate about movies, spent a lot of time making films, doing his own bits and pieces, and being chatty and being very personable, went off and made amazing films. And he went off and he works with production companies down in Pinewood. He's now gone off and did something else with Marvel, so he's working on movies. My friend Leanne, who's based in Southern California, she worked on Guardians of the Galaxy in Paddington. So we have a huge, big groundswell of people who are hugely creative, both in short film, right through to the film festivals, through to people going off and making amazing films here, then anywhere. But it shouldn't be that people are afraid to pick up a camera and afraid to shoot movies and to write movies, because somebody pick up your script. And you find these amazing kind of filmmakers out there in all the kind of weird and wonderful places that you wouldn't expect them to be. So I did a film event at Castle Vale about 4 or 5 years back, because people were hugely passionate about community film at Castle Vale. And all the time you think, I make films there. Everybody makes films, there'll be a story to tell. So if you can do, make films, make as many movies as you possibly can do, because the BFI are watching. The BFI and BCU are the partners. They want to sort of see what the stories are. They want to have things that aren't just Hollywood blockbusters, and which I love Marvel and DC. They want superhero films. They want stories of people who are us, people who have interesting ideas, and people that are fun and interesting and engaging. That's kind of what people want to find doing movies.
I think that's terrific. Rob, your book is out in June of next year, right? And if we all have a whip round between us, we could probably afford one hardback between us, I think, if we all chipped in a couple of quid. Rob, I think it's terrific what you've done, and I think it's terrific what you continue to do to encourage youngsters to break into film. But I think if there's a message that's coming from what you've been saying, I know you've always been passionate about this, it's not just youngsters, it's
out there. We've been away from, and there's no age limit, there's no restrictions. So there's nothing to stop people making movies at all.
Rob McLaughlin, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
potential.
That wasn't to be cool.
Rob always makes an exit. It is a proper mic drop moment, that is. Oh, dear me. What else am I to... Dan, I've lost the rest of my script. It's there. Where are we? What time is it? Right, usually by this stage I'm running late because I know that you've probably lost interest by this point and I'm just counting the minutes till we get to Dan's quiz. No, really? Okay. Got a bit of work to do here. I'm just going to segue for a little bit. I mean, it's just a trend that I've noticed in the ways that films are being sold, and in particular, how fans are taking a greater part in the way films are being marketed, whether the movie studios want them to or not. And I found this quite a phenomenon. I credit my eldest child, who sat there, for putting me onto this a few weeks ago. And he sent me a video. I looked at it and my eyes nearly bled out of my head. And you can see if you can guess what video that's going to be shortly. But one of the things with fan marketing is it can go a couple of ways. And this, what I'm talking about, is the moments where hugely well-resourced Hollywood studios with their big marketing departments try and promote their film in a certain way, and fans sort of take that over and take it off in a slightly different direction. And so I've got an example of where that sort of goes well, and I've got two examples of where it sort of doesn't. But I want to start with the sort of how it goes well. And there's a film. So who's seen, hang on, have I put these in the right order? I have. Damn, thank you. Who's seen that? Who's seen 2012's John Carter? Not a massively seen film for a movie that cost $250 million to make, really. Of those of you who saw it, are we thumbs up, thumbs down? The little bit in the middle, mainly, oh, it's kind of, but generally not regarded as the worst big flop of all time, which was how it was being reported at one point. I was pretty okay with it, but if you're unfamiliar with this, looking at me, Dad, John Carter is based on John Carter of Mars. That was what it was originally going to be called for a long time, and this was made by Disney. Disney at a point where it was only just acquiring Marvel, it hadn't got Star Wars. And if you go back to the start of the 2010s, Disney was trying to make new blockbuster franchises. The Pirates of the Caribbean movies were wheezing out a little bit. And so it pumped enormous amounts of money into four things, I think. Tron Legacy was one, which was the most expensive film ever made by a debut film director at the time. An extraordinary amount of money. Are we all right, Tron Legacy? Where are we on that? Nah. Oh, I heard someone made a noise. I mean, that just goes. It's a bit of a Roy Kent noise. Anyone watching Ted Lasso? Okay, right. But it did Tomorrowland. That was one, and that sort of. I was sort of all right. But you didn't like Tomorrowland. What's the Lone Ranger? Do you see the Lone Ranger? I mean, if you started watching the Lone Ranger now, the next Bond film would have been made by the time that it's finished. And that Bond film is long. I had moments in the Lone Ranger that I quite like. But John Carter, the idea was this is going to launch a trilogy. It's based on books by Edgar Rice Burroughs. Edgar Rice Burroughs, best known for Tarzan. And it was a film that Hollywood was trying to make for years and years and years and years and years. And eventually it landed at the desk of a man called Andrew Stanton. Now, Andrew Stanton is a film director who came out of Pixar, making films like Finding Nemo, Monsters Inc. might be, a couple of big Pixar movies. And he got to make a dream project for him, the live-action version of John Carter of Mars. Disney, it would be fair to say, didn't really know how to sell it. For instance, there was a lot of umming and ahhing over the title. Could they get away with selling a $200 million film called John Carter of Mars? Well, no, they decided to call it John Carter. You know, there might be a John Carter in the room. I mean, it's just like they just went with a name that I would suggest doesn't mean an awful lot to a lot of people. And then they put out a trailer for the movie. And the trailer was really badly received, not least by the fan base. Now, the beauty of the John Carter fan base, and I think fandom can be a hugely positive thing as well as sometimes not so much a positive thing, is that they were following the film and they were that irritated with the way that the trailer had been put together that they decided to have another go. And this was documented in, I think I've got the slide for the book. It's a really good book, this is. And I think they just published it on Kindle or something like that. It's a guy called Michael D. Sellers. It's called John Carter and the Gods of Hollywood. And it talks about where Disney made lots of mistakes with this film. But also, it goes in some detail about how the fans got hold of that trailer for John Carter, remade it, repackaged it, and put it back out to the point where the director of the film was just like, that's the trailer we should have had. And I mean, it made the Hollywood trade press in the end. You know, fan-made trailer for John Carter could be better than the official one, and that was Deadline. I love the like little strap underneath, we want to help. The spirit of we want to help. But there was a perception that this film was in trouble, as it duly would be. But by fandom getting hold of that trailer and trying to do something with it, they put out something positive. It didn't stop the film becoming the flop that it ultimately was in terms of commercial terms. And Tomorrowland, The Lone Ranger and John Carter were each films that 2 weeks after their release were followed by headlines such as this one. Just like they're going to take a big commercial write down because it didn't make all its money back in 2-3 weeks. Because of the way big corporations have taken over film studios, it's now reported quarterly, never mind the fact that people will be selling DVDs, well, not DVDs, whatever we're watching in 20 years' time of it, ultimately will make its money back. The bit that wasn't reported about John Carter is I found a story about 6 months after that that basically said actually the loss wasn't that big after all. And so by the time we're coming to it, you know, it's probably broken even. The point was, for Disney, that was one of three films that was a real fork in the road that led to it reducing the amount of movies that it made. They didn't get to do the John Carter trilogy in the end. But the first film is pretty well liked. I think we've just got a little bit of a straw poll on that. But that was how fandom can really try and push something and turn it for good. Now, more recently, there has been a film out called... Oh no, oh heck, I've completely missed that bit. Right, this is an glad you're here, Dan. So, we're going to come to the film in question in a sec. I just wanted an example of this because this is how fan marketing can also work when the studios and the fans work together. And this is a flash mob. Do we know what flash mobs are? Is anyone familiar? It's just that you're trying to mind your own business and a load of feckers turn up behind you and just start, you know, banging out tunes. That's not the swear word. You notice I just thought, right, okay. So here's one that was done, I think it was the Cardiff Cineworld for when Les Miserables came out. And so that was, what, 2012, 2013. Filmed huge success, won Oscars. I'm showing you this clip partly because I just like the faces in the background of the people who are just like, get out of my way, I want my hot dog. But this is an example, and this went viral. About how I freeze frame the shots. Look at it, that WTF face is exactly mine, looking at that. So this brought me on to this film, which I've cunningly segued onto. So, does anyone know where this is going? Right, okay. So this came out recently. This is Cinderella, yeah? A modern day retelling, produced by James Corden. Where are we on James Corden? Oh, I got a thumbs up. God, that's a crowd splitter, isn't it? Okay. So produced by James Corden, starred Camila Cabello as Cinderella, also featuring Billy Piper, that would be a film. Billy Porter, although her last film was great, Red Beetle, that's really good. Billy Porter, Idina Menzel, and then someone who contributes to my magazine that I've not plugged yet, Ramesh Ranganathan turned up in that as well. I'll come to him shortly. But because this was originally going to be a big cinema release for Sony, and then Sony's gone through this weird thing where it's been selling its family films off. And, you know, we're on the eve of the release of No Time to Die, and currently, as we stand here on the 29th of September 2021, the number one film at the box office in the UK this year is a Sony family release, Peter Rabbit 2. Is the top grossing film of the year. And I'll say, I think it's a pretty decent film as well. I say that as someone who didn't like the one before at all. James Corden voices Peter Rabbit in that, there is a link. But after that, Sony sold all of its family films to streaming services. So there's a great movie called The Mitchells versus the Machines. Has anyone seen that? An animated film. Really terrific, as good as any blockbuster I've seen all year. And that's on Netflix, and just like, it shouldn't be on Netflix. I'm kind of glad it is, because it saved me a few quid, but I want to see that on a big screen. They then sold Vivo, which is a sweet animated film, music by Lin-Manuel Miranda, and that was fine. I enjoyed that as well. But they sold Cinderella. I just thought this is a box office shoo-in. Nonetheless, the fact that it was going to Amazon also brought with it a higher marketing budget, and fully on board with that was James Corden. Now, James Corden, as much as he may be divisive here, in America, he is, as I suspect many of you know, a high-profile talk show host. He has, is it The Late Show with James Corden? And, you know, gets big ratings, he does things like carpool karaoke, that thing, all sorts of little segments that have a habit of just exploding on YouTube. But one of the things he tries to do is flash mobs. Right, so with this particular film, what he tried to do was organise in Los Angeles traffic a flash mob for Cinderella. That was part of the marketing of the film. The problem was he did it in Los Angeles traffic. There was no way this was going to be a surprise, and that meant that somebody would see the footage before it had been packaged and edited and put on The Late Show, as you would expect to see it. And the fans took over the marketing of this, because, I mean, if I was a grown-up, I'd show you the packaged version, but we all know I'm not going to do that. So instead, this was the raw footage that went online, what, minutes after it actually happened. And this happened, has anyone seen this? If you want to cover your eyes for a minute, it's a bit of an experience. But this was the flash mob that they organised. I mean, to be fair, Twitter went to town on that straight away. I think it took me no time at all to find these three favourite replies, beginning to think that they did it, was organised by whichever movie's competing with Cinderella. I mean, this next one is glorious, actually. Yeah, sorry I'm late, boss. James Corden jumped in front of my car and started humping the air in a rat suit for 5 minutes. It was a whole thing. But sometimes what I think with Twitter responses is a picture, the whole thing of a picture test says 1,000 words.
If anyone's listening to the audio of this, I'm not describing that at all. I just,
but then there was the re-edit of it, and the re-edit of it is absolutely incredible, because someone had the idea. And you know, if there are any film students in this is a masterclass in how the sound can change the tone of a piece of footage completely. So somewhat, is anyone familiar with the horror movie Suspiria? Now, Suspiria, if you don't know it, has a really haunting score. And someone thought, what would happen if you put that score against that footage? Get through the next bit, but this reminded me of my last bad example of where this goes wrong, and it's a film that I never made it all the way through. It's from 2011. It's a film called Jack and Jill. Has anyone heard of the film Jack and Jill? Yeah. Right, I mean, this is the film where Adam Sandler stars with Adam Sandler in a film produced and written by Adam Sandler. And to read you the synopsis, Jack hates Thanksgiving because of his twin sister Jill's annual visit. He's forced to bear with her for longer after actor Al Pacino, who is actually in this film, whom he needs for an ad, develops a crush on Jill. And if you're unfamiliar, I'll play you 30 seconds of the trailer, but Adam, well, I mean...
Family, there's one person who drives you a little crazy.
I gotta pick Jill up at 4 a.m.
She comes once a year and she's leaving on Sunday.
But during the holidays...
Jack. No fighting this year.
There's no escaping it when it's your sister.
How we doing?
Your twin sister.
Are you going bald?
Huh?
No, you're getting fatter, and your hair doesn't realize it needs to cover more face.
Okay.
From the...
So, I'm the kid in the middle. basically there. Adam Sandler got $20 million for this film, but he was box office gold at the time. He was the person that every studio wanted to work with. His films were cheap to make, and they kept bringing in an audience. And Jack and Jill brought in something like $70 million at the American box office, and that was a disappointment. But the best bit about this is what the internet did with that trailer. Because this came out in 2011, 2012. Social media was just bubbling up. People had affordable video editing software on their computers, and the mashup was starting to bubble. And I bring this story up because I was editing a film website at the time, and we accidentally put the wrong trailer of Jack and Jill up. And we put the wrong trailer up because, let's just say, the alternative ones that interspersed it with footage from other films were getting more hits than the actual trailer for Jack and Jill. So I'm going to show you just what happens when Jack and Jill meets A Clockwork Orange, for instance.
And grown-ups.
Jack and Jill are so alike.
We are nothing alike, I promise you.
She isn't so.
Jill, this is Autumn.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
She's homeless, right?
Are you whispering with a bullhorn or something? Everybody hears you.
She isn't shy.
I couldn't list together the things I want to do before I leave.
Studio tour, beach, horseback riding.
Let's go!
Oh my god!
Stay out, Monica.
And she isn't leaving.
She's forwarding her mail!
Look how I freeze the shots again. I'm going to skip the next one down so we can get to your quiz quicker. But the one I want to focus on, and this is the one that went absolutely nuts, there is a really haunting dark film made in the late 1970s called Hardcore. It's not like that. directed by Paul Schrader, and it starred George C. Scott. And George C. Scott, who won an Oscar for Patton, famously rejected the Oscar. I've got to skip that one. Right. The footage of George C. Scott watching a film in Hardcore, interspersed with Jack and Jill, became internet gold. And if you've not seen this, this is some piece of work.
I crave this family time.
Please don't screw my pool.
It's just beautiful. And that was the trailer that we ran. Be careful with your marketing is the moral of the story. I'm just skipping as fast as I can so we can get to the quiz, but I've just got to bring it back to Cinderella just for a minute, because I think I mentioned, I might have subtly plugged the fact that Romesh writes for my magazine, and so he's in Cinderella. And I have to text him to chase up, get his articles in. I don't think he'll mind me saying it. He's given me permission to use this text exchange. Now, usually, if my kids are listening, just close your ears a minute, because this is the one instance where I was watching a film and I used my mobile phone, because I didn't know who Romesh was in this film. And there's a moment in the movie where three rodents appear on the screen. Is that there? And when they started talking, I was just like, hang on, I know that voice. So I picked my phone up, I broke my rule, you may tut. Yes, I deserve that. I just sent him a message. I was just like, hang on, we'd been talking about it. I genuinely didn't know what it was going to be. So I sent him this text. So the one at the top was just the last exchange we'd had before. No easy way to ask you this. Are you a rat? About 2 seconds later, he replied. 2 seconds later, Cinderella is available now on Amazon Prime Video, ladies and gentlemen. Right, so it's Dan's quiz, and I know you get excited and you whoop when it's Dan's quiz. Excellent, excellent. And because it's Dan's quiz, and ordinarily we're not allowed to do prizes, what I've done this time is I've left you all a copy of the magazine just up there if you want to take it afterwards. If you've already got it, please spread the word. I put the junior magazine up there. Just take a back issue. See if you can help me get the word out about this. I think a lot of you know I'm trying to build opportunities for people with that magazine and just try and just get the word out a little bit. That's the serious bit before we get to what immature nonsense he's come up with next. So Dan's quiz is... Right, fairly reasonable, Dan, yeah?
Yeah, reasonable.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong? One slight problem, that what we're going to do is, Dan's found less, let's just say, critics' quotes. We've been on websites, and we've found legitimate user-left reviews of an assortment of films, and just as a little game at the end, we thought we'd see if you could guess what film that they're talking about. Easy rules, right? Right, what could, go on, Dan. Let's start us with an easy one. Dan, what you got? So, oh God. So, I mean, shout out a guess if you think you know it. Potato's gonna potato. It's just like one of the phrases of our time.
It's
X-Men Dark Phoenix. See, you've got the hang of this already. Look at that. Look at, see, when Dan does slides, I mean, they go all posh and day glow as well. I mean, he puts in the shift there. So, now you've got the hang of it. What else have we got, Dan? This film is like plagiarism celebrated. It's like Lance Armstrong on a guitar. We got a guess.
Yesterday.
Who said that? Ah, oh, excellent. It was Yesterday. That's a good picture, that one. That really suits the cinema screen, that, doesn't it? I think we've really made use of the facilities. Okay. I hope they make a sequel to this with Carnage. There's a clue. The critics, this all wrong. I love this. I hope the critics were wrong, and according to me, they were. Brilliant. Anyone? There we go, Venom, you're getting the hang of this. Right, we've got what, four of them? Jesus, all right, Dan. Okay, this movie is genius, takes a risk that no other movie would take these days, basically politics. It stands up to all the people denying climate change and proves them wrong. The graphics are amazing, the acting is outstanding, it's so good it deserves an Oscar. I think I know this one.
Geostorm.
It's Geostorm! Awesome! Masterpiece. That's the one, I think the only film I'm quoted on the box of, and it was because they couldn't find another quote. They legitimately had a ring around. It's just, yeah, I'll do that. The worst film ever, an Ed Miliband lookalike with a rubbish Cockney accent as a gas lamp lighter. Who said that? Mary Poppins Returns. Is that what, Dan? Ed Miliband lookalike. It's just like, okay. But we're running out, so hang on. So, no one talks in their sleep or snores, and see, Dan, we've got a problem with this one, haven't we? Right, so, when Dan sent this through, I think he was sending me a message by incorrectly putting a different poster on the next slide. So, if I've got this right, the answer on the next slide is actually to something completely different, but I want you to judge whether Dan's just trying to be nice to me. So, what do we think that film is? I'm pretty sure the timeline in the movie is continuous enough to prove she only had three or four contractions, none of that annoying 30-hour stuff for her. Horror movie? Adam's Family Values. That's an amazing guess, but it's just like, I thought that was A Quiet Place. That was my guess. But then Dan said Love, Simon, which is very sweet. You know, and you're seeing a burgeoning romance develop between the two of us here. But can you clarify that, Dan? Was it A Quiet Place?
It was A Quiet Place.
And
it's supposed to be.
And are you?
Yeah.
All right. How many more we got? We're just about on to, okay. What people are missing is that it really does point out how people, I can't see that, people are consistently on their phone, how kids are obsessed with the phone as a way of communicating instead of talking. As someone who almost got hit twice yesterday by people texting and driving, the message is solid.
Doctor Strange?
That Doctor Strange? I don't know this one.
Mitchell's
no?
Mitchell's versus Machines.
Which one?
Mitchell's versus
the Machines. Is it Mitchell's versus the
Machines?
Hang on, I've got a prize on it. Who's going to get that? Did we come up with that? Yeah, of course I get that. Okay, it's animated.
Wall-E?
No, I think you're thinking a bit too high class and high rent for this show, but, you know, fair dues. It's not one of the finest mainstream animated films of recent times. So what, go on, show us. The Emoji Movie, which is legitimately one of the worst films I have ever seen in a cinema. And the internal logic of that film is so screwed up, I could lose an hour and a half just talking to you about that. How many more have we got?
Two
more, we can do that. Okay.
I read the first book, it's so badly written, only a C- at best if it were a GCSE. The only reason it sold was was the overhyped sex scenes, which again were unrealistic. You can't have unprotected sex, cover your ears, you can't have unprotected sex, then trot off wearing no underwear and a short dress, gravity won't allow it. Okay, so it's not the first one. Okay, so what do we think that is? Yeah. Oh, so it's all the blokes are straight in there, aren't they? It's just 50 Shades Darker. Yeah, well done. Incredible. So some of them, we should say, we did pitch this show at 12A, and some of the ones we've not been able to show you. We just thought we'd give it a try and see if there's anything in this. So we've got one more, haven't we, Dan? What? Go on, round us off with one. When do any lifeguards look the size of the rock? He'd probably swim 20 yards and drown from muscle fatigue. I love that. I love that. Anyone want to have a stab at that? That is Baywatch, ladies and gentlemen. That is Baywatch. Dan, thank you, as always, very much. I am just about on time, so I am at the any other business part of the show. Well, how did that get there? So apparently there's a book out tomorrow, have I mentioned that? But more to the point, with this particular show, we are intending to bring it back twice more this year. Have I put that on the next slide? Yeah. So we are currently booked in for Wednesday the 24th of November and Wednesday the 22nd of December, which will be our Christmas special. And so Lord knows what chaos we're going to come up with there. All I can really say is thank you so much again for coming out and supporting us. Please do take a copy of the magazine at the back. And take that with my compliments and appreciation for you coming out to support these shows. My huge thanks and appreciation to the brilliant staff at the MAC who look after us so tremendously. And my thanks too to the hairiest computer operator in the West Midlands. Thank you very much. And finally, my thanks to you for coming along. You all have a safe trip home. This has been Movie Geek Live. Good night. Thank you.
Button. I've got one job.